Welcome, everyone. Let's get started. Welcome to those of you in cyberspace joining us as well. This is a special session of the Warwick Post-Kantian Seminar. We're delighted to have three distinguished Hegel scholars here today to be talking about our very own Stephen Holgate's recent publication on Hegel, his two-volume Hegel on Being, Quantity and the Birth of Quality and the Birth of Quantity in Hegel's Logic. Stephen is also the author of The Opening of Hegel's Logic, From Being to Infinity, two guidebooks on Hegel, many edited volumes, and his interests range to Spinoza, to Kant, to Deleuze, and to Derrida and others, in addition to his work on Hegel. We have two commentators on Stephen's book today. We have Robert Stern, who teaches at the University of Sheffield. He's past president of the British Philosophical Association, currently president of the Aristotelian Society, fellow of the British Academy, past editor of the European Journal of Philosophy. His books include Kant, Hegel, and the Structure of the Object, Hegelian Metaphysics, Kantian Ethics, and most recently a book on Loebstrup, am I pronouncing it correctly? Loebstrup's Ethics. We're also delighted to have Elena Ficarra, who is at Paderborn, University of Paderborn in Germany. She, prior to being at Paderborn, was the Theodor Linnan Research Fellow at CUNY in New York, where she also held a Humboldt Fellowship. She's taught as well, or visited as well, rather, at the University of Pittsburgh and at the Technische Universität in Berlin. She's the author, most recently, of The Form of Truth, Hegel's Philosophical Logic, which was published in 2021 with de Gruyter. Prior to that, a book on Heidegger, a book on Kant as well, and numerous papers and edited volumes and translations. So delighted to have these three scholars here today. And I'm going to turn over to Stephen for a brief précis of the book, and then we'll go to Bob and to Elena. Thank you very much for joining us, and over to you, Stephen.
Good. Well, thank you very much to Andrew and Daniele for organizing this event. And a special thanks to Bob and Elena for agreeing to participate in it and to wade through my book in preparation for all these, however much you read through before you fell asleep. And thanks also to you for coming and to you online for joining us. This is my first in-person appearance in this room since February 2020. So it's good to be back and actually to see people in the flesh, people that I've obviously been talking to across the airwaves for several months. Now, on the assumption that not all of you will know what my book is about, or books, two volumes, I'll tell you. Hegel on Being, which is the name for the two volumes together, is a study of Hegel's logic, or at least a study of the first part on the doctrine of being. So a bit on Hegel's logic. Hegel's logic, as I understand it, presents Hegel's derivation of the basic categories of thought. And so in this respect, yes, I remember, sorry, kicking this, that will happen regularly. So Hegel's logic presents Hegel's derivation of the basic categories of thought. And so in this respect, presents a revised version of Kant's metaphysical deduction in which he derives categories from the functions of judgment. Hegel's derivation of the categories is, however, at the same time, at least on my reading, a derivation of the basic forms or ways of being, and so can be understood as a revised version of the metaphysics of Aristotle or Spinoza. Hegel's logic, as I understand it, is thus a post-Kantian ontology or metaphysics. And just to note, Hegel's not the only post-Kantian philosopher who developed a metaphysics. Schelling did, and Deleuze did in many ways as well, although neither did in the form of a logic. So the idea of a post-Kantian metaphysics is not quite as bizarre as some Kantians like to think. Now, the distinctive feature of Hegel's logic, in my view, is that it is systematically presuppositionless. Voraussetzungslos. Hegel actually uses the word voraussetzungslosigkeit, which I just love to pronounce. So this is not made up. He used the word, and all of his critics at the time, including Schelling, Kierkegaard, and Feuerbach, knew that Hegel made this claim, although this has been lost sight of somewhat in subsequent years. Now, Hegel's logic has historical presuppositions. Since presuppositionless logic is itself made necessary by the modern demand for freedom and self-criticism. Such logic also has linguistic and hermeneutical presuppositions, since the philosopher must speak a language and be interested in discovering the categories of thought and being in order to embark on presuppositionless logic as Hegel conceives it. But the logic itself begins with the utterly indeterminate thought of being, and takes no principles or rules of thought for granted, not even dialectic, and in that sense, it is systematically presuppositionless. Now, part one of Hegel on being sets out the project of Hegel's logic and places the latter in relation to Kant, Spinoza, and other thinkers. My book also explains the distinctive method of Hegel's logic, which, just pretty briefly, consists, in my view, in rendering explicit what is implicit in a category, as well as the logic's relation to Hegel's phenomenology. And the book then explains how the logic can be both a logic and an ontology, which, of course, is not accepted by everybody. And the book also contains an updated discussion of Robert Pippin's interpretation that corrects an error in my earlier discussion that Robert kindly pointed out to me. So I have updated that. The rest of the book then explains, not just in general, but in detail, in quite a lot of detail, how Hegel's logic develops from the initial thought of pure being through a whole series of categories, including those of something, finitude, infinity, the one and the many, quantity, number, and measure. People are used to paying close attention to the details of Aristotle's arguments or Kant's, but for some reason they don't do the same with Hegel, but prefer to discuss general topics like dialectic or idealism. Now, my aim in Hegel on Being is indeed to help readers understand those general topics, but more importantly, it is to help them understand the details of Hegel's arguments and of his sentences, so that they can actually read Hegel's book without feeling utterly confused. The problem with some books on Hegel's logic is that they are comprehensible in themselves, they tell a good story, but they don't always make sense of Hegel's individual sentences. So when the student then goes from the secondary text back to Hegel, then they're in a pickle. I've aimed to, or tried to, rectify that omission, so that the hope is that if you read Hegel on Being, you will be able to go back into Hegel's logic and make sense of at least some of Hegel's sentences. I've also tried to explain why I think that most of Hegel's arguments, when properly understood, important qualification, are successful. But I have noted when they aren't successful and need revision. Speculative logic, on my view, does not belong to Hegel, or indeed anybody else. And it's incumbent on us to revise and improve on Hegel's version if that should prove necessary. And I've done so on at least two occasions in Hegel on Being. Other distinctive features of Hegel on Being include the following. It examines the whole of the logic of being, including the sections on quantity and measure that often get ignored. It contains a new chapter on Hegel's critique of Kant, which tries to do justice to Kant in ways that I think Hegel does not. It includes three chapters on Hegel and Frege on number, which I think provide the most extensive comparison of the two in any language that's known to me anyway. The book also includes a chapter on Hegel's defense of calculus against contemporary critics. And I want to emphasize that, Hegel's defense of calculus against contemporary critics. A chapter that took me back to my maths A-level, which I sat successfully, I may add, in 1972. So you heard of that, the 70s, is that 10 years? Long, long time ago. We were all in black and white in those days and used to walk around very, very quickly. The book also explains the transition from measure to essence in an original way. And indeed, that problem of how you get from being to essence was what motivated me to write this book in the first place. I was due to write a book on essence. And then I realized I couldn't understand how you got from being to essence. And so I thought, ugh, I've just got to go through quantity and measure. And then, ugh, I've just got to do the whole logic of being again. And then 19 years later, there we are. But anyway, I think that is an important contribution to the book. And it now sets me up to start on Essence next year. But what do we discover in the course of the doctrine of being and by reading Hegel on Being? Well, we discover what Hegel takes to be the most basic categories of thought and how they are to be conceived. These categories guide our thought and action throughout our adult lives, Hegel thinks, but they're often only instinctively and unconsciously at work within us or conceived in an abstract manner. Hegel's logic thus shows us how to conceive properly categories with which we are already familiar, but which we do not usually reflect on. It shows us how to understand very simple categories such as something, or more complex ones such as measure. And it explains why we think in terms of specific categories at all. Why do we invoke the idea of infinity? Why do we think of a thing as one among many? And why do we think in terms of quantity? Why do we assume that things have size or that they can be counted? Speculative logic, and in particular the doctrine of being, provides answers to these questions by deriving the categories concerned from the sheer being of thought itself. Second, we discover in the course of the logic the most basic forms or ways of being, not just thought, but of being. Since speculative logic is also metaphysics, the doctrine of being, for example, discloses what it is to be something, what it is to be finite, to be a number, to be a measure. But speculative logic does not tell us what it is to be an object in nature, what it is to be a spatio-temporal entity, nor does it explain what it is to be a conscious, moral, social, or historical subject. We have to wait until Hegel's philosophies of nature and spirit to learn about these concrete ways of being in the world. In that respect, the logic gives us a partial picture of what there is. Yet, the logical structures or categories that it unfolds are ways of being that are exhibited by things in nature and by self-conscious historical beings, such as ourselves. The tree in my garden is something. It's finite. It's one among many. It has a certain size or quantum. Speculative logic discloses what each of these ways of being involves. And in that sense, it tells us about the tree and about other things in the world. Even if, at least not before the doctrine of the concept, it does not tell us what it is to be a living organism. In the logic of measure in particular, Hegel derives several logical structures that underlie significant phenomena in nature. The specifying measure, for example, is exemplified by specific heat. And the two higher forms of realized measure, das realisierte Maß, are exemplified by two laws that govern motion. Galileo's law of fall, which is that the distance traveled by a falling body is proportional to the square of the time, and Kepler's third law of planetary motion, that the squares of the orbital periods of any two planets are proportional to the cubes of their mean distances from the sun. Now, critics may argue, and they do argue, that Hegel just tailors his account of such measures to the natural phenomena. But in fact, it's the other way around. Hegel derives the logical structure of each measure in a purely immanent manner from the one that precedes it, and then points to the natural phenomena that exemplifies the measure. In this way, he does not derive the phenomena themselves from the nature of being. That can be done, if at all, only in the philosophy of nature. But he shows that the measures that underlie those phenomena are immanent in being itself. He thereby goes at least part of the way to proving Galileo's and Kepler's laws are not just constructions of the human mind, but are being's own laws, laws that being gives itself, and that thus express being's autonomy, its autonomy. There's no doubt that Hegel's derivation of the various categories of thought and ways of being in the doctrine of being is often difficult to comprehend, and that his text poses considerable challenges to even the most sympathetic reader. In my book, however, I've attempted both to explain how logically the categories are derived and to shed light on Hegel's often forbidding sentences and paragraphs. And I've also indicated ways in which Hegel's conception of certain categories can be brought to bear on the thought of other philosophers, such as Frege. My book will not be, and is not intended to be, the last word on Hegel's logic of being. I hope, though, that it will encourage and enable those who have hitherto shied away from studying Hegel's great work in detail, perhaps some of you, to explore its riches and even to enjoy being challenged by it, as I, along with many colleagues and students, have been fortunate to do. Thank you.